Greetings to the brightest audience in the country. I am Bob Enyart, the pastor of Denver Bible Church. Welcome to another edition of Real Science Friday.
And I'm Fred Williams, software engineer and creation speaker.
Hi, Fred. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. Glad to be back.
Yeah. Now, Fred is also the webmaster for the esteemed Creation Research Society. I love those guys, Fred.
Great organization, been around since 1963, and they put out a journal that's peer-reviewed by other scientists.
A fabulous journal, CRSQ, Creation Research Society Quarterly. So to get an article published, it's a peer-reviewed journal.
That's right. It has to be accepted by a panel of scientists for publication.
And they have hundreds of advanced degreed scientists as members.
Yes, that's right. It's over 700 right now.
Over 700. And then many other members. You could become a member.
Yeah, sustaining members, there's about 2,000, and that's just regular guys like me.
But you're not just a member. You're also their webmaster.
That's right.
And they have a beautiful website, so good job. And you have your own website, evolutionfairytale.com, and Fred, that is a good site.
Thanks, Bob. I got some of those ideas from you, from your TV show from many years ago.
Oh, yeah. That's why we've resurrected that show, you know.
Yeah, that's right. That's good news.
BEL Televised Classics people are subscribing to. And in the current issue that we are going through, it's the December 2006 edition of their Creation Research Society Quarterly. We'll talk about articles in this issue. We'll share them with the audience so they have an idea what creation folks are talking about these days. But in the very back of the journal, there are the minutes of their most recent board of directors meeting. And they do mention you very briefly, Fred. It's so exciting to see your name in there. And it says, our webmaster, Fred Williams, has been invited to appear quarterly on a Denver radio show to discuss creation-related issues. Quarterly, Fred, quarterly. You're here every other week.
Yeah, that's right, Bob.
We started out, we thought we would do this quarterly, but it's been so popular. And on our website, the creation shows we've been doing and also the week-long series we did with Walt Brown, these are our most popular shows. People are fascinated by creation evolution. And so, hey, we're excited about that because that's a passion of mine.
Yeah, definitely a passion of mine too, Bob, and
yeah,
it's really a very important topic to talk about.
Yeah, it's foundational. How did we get here?
Foundational to the Bible. It defends Genesis. Evolution is an attack on the very foundation of the Bible, and if the foundations fall, what can the righteous do? That's one of the proverbs in the Bible, and so we stand on the foundation of the Bible.
Yeah, and there's this well-known atheist, Reginald Finley, InfidelGuide.com, his website. He's been on ABC and they've rerun it repeatedly, you know, his atheistic lifestyle. And this guy, he of course rejects creation. He believes in the Big Bang and evolution. And so I got to debate him for 2 hours this week. We're putting some of that on our website, in fact. It was a lot of fun. But when you are equipped, when you could give an answer to those who ask, it is exciting. And so let's start, Fred. Why don't we begin with the article about the Crab Nebula? Could you let the audience know what is a Crab Nebula?
Okay, it's the brightest and best known of what's called a supernova remnant. And that's when a star explodes and it forms this expanding gas cloud.
Mm-hmm. The word nebula, that comes from the Greek, meaning cloud. And early on, a little detour before we get to the Crab Nebula, scientists, as they made telescopes, they look up in the sky and they would see stars and planets, but then they would see what looked like clouds. And they were unsure, what are these clouds? And it was believed, evolutionists believe, that stars form from clouds that condense. And so every nebula they saw, they said, well, that's a gas cloud, maybe forming a star. Well, for quite a few decades, that retarded the progress of science because so many of the nebula were galaxies. And it wasn't until Edwin Hubble, and then he made the argument, and then scientists accepted, hey, these are not just gas clouds in our galaxy. They're actually galaxies. They're separate galaxies. So it was the evolution of a solar system and a star that caused astronomy to be retarded for many decades.
Yeah, just like evolution does to regular science today and biology, some of the retardation that's gone on there.
That's absolutely right, because they see what they want to see, And so the truth often will elude them. This can happen to creationists too, of course. So we have to be on our guard and learn to be objective. Well, so what they found out was many of these nebula gas clouds were not clouds. They were actual galaxies. And that's awesome to see the power that our God has, that he could create this massive universe.
That's correct. And these supernova remnants, they're clouds now because they were once a star and they exploded. Became a cloud. Mm-hmm. And this one was observable worldwide in 1054.
This Crab Nebula began in that year. That's almost 1,000 years ago.
Yeah, that's when it was when people could see some kind of bright object in the sky.
Right. A star exploded, a supernova. It used to be that galaxies would also be called nebula, but that usage stopped. Now it's incorrect to call a galaxy a nebula because we know the nebulas are clouds in our galaxy and galaxies are absolutely separate and distinct from the Milky Way. But okay, so back almost 1,000 years ago, human beings saw this bright spot in the sky appear suddenly.
That's right. And so this article, some of the points it gets to is the number of supernovas we observe fits a model of a young universe.
A supernova is when a star explodes.
After
it explodes.
They're called SNRs, supernova remnants. Mm-hmm. If the universe was billions of years old, we'd expect to see roughly 2,000 of these in what's called a second stage, which is about 120,000 light years across.
Okay.
So we'd expect to see roughly 2,200.
So when a star explodes, we call that a supernova.
And it expands.
And when it explodes, it doesn't then disappear. All the matter expands in a circular fashion.
That's right.
A cloud, and it gets bigger and bigger because of the inertia of the explosion. And over time, it gets, how big did you say the second stage would be?
The second stage should be about 120,000
light years across. Okay.
And so if the universe is billions of years old or 20 billion years old, we should see about 2,000 of those. And if the universe is roughly 6,000 to 7,000, this is what the author went off of, we would expect to see 125 supernova remnants.
In the second stage.
In the second stage.
Well, if the universe is billions of years old, there should be over 2,000, so we probably see about 2,000.
Well, we see actually 200, Bob, which is real close to the 125 or so we expect. And of the third stage supernova remnants, that would be about 6 million light years across.
Okay.
We would expect to see 5,000.
5,000 of those. In other words, the stars that blew up, let's say, 2 billion years ago, they've had 2 billion years to continue to expand.
That's right.
And so the bigger the remnant, the older the explosion. And so how many third stage supernova remnants should we see if the universe has been here for billions of years?
We should see 5,000.
5,000.
Now, it's only 6,000, 10,000 years old in that range. We shouldn't see any. We should absolutely see none.
We should see none because those explosions haven't had time to get that big.
That's right. And okay. Guess how many we observe?
50,000.
Getting warmer.
Okay.
Real hot. No, we see zero.
Zero. We see none.
That's right.
So that's another piece of evidence. Like there are so many geochronometers, ways to estimate the age of the Earth, and there are so many powerful chronometers that indicate the Earth is not billions of years old. It turns out that's also true of the galaxy.
Yeah, there's
so
many evidences in the universe, and we're just mentioning one. Here's what some evolutionists have said regarding supernova remnants. Clark and Caswell were commented as saying, "Why have the large number of expected remnants not been detected?" Another evolutionist from the Royal Observatory said, another surprise is how rare Crab Nebula-type SNRs are. They again expect to see many more of these, and they're not seeing them.
This is secular scientists, too. And there's also the issue of distant galaxies. We use our telescopes like Hubble in space, and it takes these deep field images of something that's really far away from us. And so the atheists, the astronomers, believe that we're peering back toward the very beginning of the universe, and so we should see galaxies that are not fully formed, that are just forming. And so this author here, Don DeYoung, points out that as they look with these powerful telescopes to supposedly the beginning of the universe, they have a problem. They keep finding fully formed galaxies at these remote distances.
Yeah, they find a mature creation of space objects. For example, galaxies, when you observe them in space, a lot of people see pictures of the, of this winding up effect. They got spiral
galaxies.
Arms. Yeah. So they got these spiral arms. Well, evolutionists would expect that as that thing gets older and older, it's like a clock screw that winds up, that thing should become a featureless disk. It's called the winding up problem, and evolutionists don't have an explanation for it. In fact, Bob, when we got together with the Reasons to Believe crowd, mm-hmm. we thought, okay, here's some guys, some of them are scientists from CU.
Yes.
They'll at least have maybe an answer. They couldn't even give us an explanation.
An answer. With a galaxy, a spiral galaxy, there are two different problems. One is it doesn't form instantly, fully formed, looking like a spiral. And the second is after it's been around for billions of years, then it should lose its spiral shape.
That's right.
And so this author, Don DeYoung, he references an article in Science News. Now, Science News in the year 2005, that's not a creationist publication, right?
That's right.
That's not. And this article is by R. Cowan, and it's titled Crisis in the Cosmos.
That's right.
Crisis in the Cosmos? What is it, global warming on Mars? No. It's the fact that as they look at galaxies that are at these furthest remote distances, they look just like galaxies next door to us.
That's amazing.
So that is a
powerful
real
evidence for a mature creation.
Right.
And not some process evolving over billions of years.
Right. A big bang.
So another thing they talk about in the article is other creationist implications. I don't know how many people in the audience have seen Privileged Planet. It talks a lot about how so many parameters for our existence, for Earth to even be able to sustain life.
Right.
It's remarkable how many things have to be just right. Mm-hmm. And the comment in this article is that if we were more towards the center of our own galaxy, we'd be closer to densely populated stars and would probably experience a greater number of nearby supernova remnants. What would that mean for us? Supernova explosions
Uh-oh.
Nearby?
Yeah.
That may not bode well for life.
For
obviously,
life
the
on
radiation
Earth.
Would destroy the ozone and possibly life itself on Earth. This comes, again, from evolutionists. This
from
comes
evolutionists.
From a book I read about 5 years ago called The Rare Earth by Ward and Brownlee. So he cites this book also. And they document all kinds of reasons why life can really only exist in the universe on Earth. Everything is set up perfect here. They totally reject the idea of aliens and that kind of stuff. And these guys are evolutionists.
The Isaac Asimov idea that the Earth is just an average planet orbiting an average star, and so there's probably millions of places where life could develop just in our own galaxy, that we know is not true. We don't know of a single other planet. We're finding planets that orbit stars that will be like molten rocks of lava because they're so close to such hot stars. But the number of variables that come together so perfectly for liquid water on the surface of the planet and a moon to pull the tidal actions to keep that water from being stagnant and dead and being just the right distance from the sun so that we're not frozen and we're not boiling, and on and on and on. And then if we were close to the center of the Milky Way galaxy, like you just said, for one, we wouldn't be able to see other galaxies because of all the brightness of the stars. And also, there's a lot of evidence from supernovas and other reasons that life might not be able to exist. That comes from the Privileged Planet video.
Yeah, and again, also from this book, The Rare Earth. You know, we're sorry for the bad news for you Star Trek convention guys.
Yeah, right, right.
Aliens is, that's science fiction, and life was designed perfectly for life to exist on Earth.
There's one atheist online at theologyonline.com, and that's a website that started by one of the elders of Denver Bible Church, launched that 10 years ago. And they now have about 700,000 posts online of questions, debates, prayer requests. It's a really neat online community to talk about God and the world and politics and all. Well, this atheist, the Phi, he got so angry at me because I showed this deep field image from NASA. You know, NASA, the headlines, this is back in the 1990s, and they're saying, okay, we focused the Hubble telescope, and we are going to peer to the very edge of the universe. Well, not the edge. We're going to peer back to the beginning of the universe, and we will see galaxies that are just forming. And so I know that God created the universe and that the universe has not been forming over billions of years. So then I intuit that they're not going to find galaxies just forming. They're not going to find it. So the image gets published, and there's excitement about the image, but not about what it shows, because it doesn't appear immediately to be evidence. Okay, now we see all these galaxies just forming. So this atheist, the Phi, he's a physicist. He got so angry at me because he said, when you look at that image, you don't know how close or how far these galaxies are by looking at them, because they might be really big, far away, or smaller, close by. So we met, the Phi and I met in Seattle on one of the piers of the restaurant, Elliot's, just this past summer.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, we met, and we had a great conversation, and he brought one of those Hubble Deep Field images, and he said to me, okay, he pointed at a galaxy and said, now, how far away is that? Is that at the edge, or is that close? I said, there's not enough information, Phi. What do you mean there's not enough information? We can't tell. Now, astronomers use redshift, and that helps them to interpret and to try to determine if it's nearby or far away. But just from looking at that, we can't tell. So he got so mad at me. So, well, he was extremely polite and gracious. We had a great time. But it's like, well, how could you tell the audience that they're far away and they're fully formed? I said, because they are and they are. That's how. I am inferring from the response of the astronomers and the scientific community that the more photographs like this we get, the worse their argument becomes, because they know that no matter how far back they look in distance and time, they're finding galaxies that are fully formed.
And wasn't that called the deep space?
Deep field image. The Hubble
deep field image.
Yeah. And so if, would you say, from your knowledge here, Don DeYoung is quoting Science News in 2005, Crisis in the Cosmos, and the point is that no matter how far they look, the galaxies are fully formed.
That's right.
I'd say that my intuition and assessing the state of scientific knowledge on distant galaxies is being confirmed.
That's right. And our last show, we talked about Big Bang predictions that haven't come true and other similar named articles about crisis, you know, with the Big Bang and things like this.
Yeah.
It's amazing
how
they just don't see the obvious that, you know, maybe the Big Bang didn't happen. Mm-hmm. You know, I do believe in the Big Bang, Bob. I say that on my website.
Come on, Fred.
Yeah, so when you click on the link, it shows the Earth rotating, and then the Earth explodes, and then a thing comes by that says, it just hasn't happened yet.
Okay, so the Big Bang based on the Bible.
That's right. The Bible says there's going to be a Big Bang. It just hasn't happened yet. There'll be a new heavens and a new Earth.
All right, now that's a great point. So you mentioned this book, The Rare Earth, and you read that some years ago. That's by evolutionists.
That's right.
There's another book called The Privileged Planet by intelligent design guys. And that's been turned into a video that we actually sell here at Bob and Yurt Live, the Privileged Planet DVD. And it is extraordinary. Although it's not made by Christians, and it's certainly not made by young Earth creationists, so we distribute it with a degree of caution. But it's just brilliant how it shows that the universe, the galaxy, Earth have been tuned for life. And it is so phenomenal.
It is. It's a fantastic video. And if you don't have it in your collection, you should get it.
Oh, boy, do you want to see it. And there was a showing of that video at the Smithsonian in Washington, D.C. And do you recall the uproar, the furor that created?
Oh, of course.
I tell you, these people who say they believe in free speech and diversity and open-mindedness, they are the most intolerant group of people. They were enraged that the Privileged Planet was going to be shown. And the Privileged Planet is filled with scientific observations, filled with them.
That's right. And all the sources to that movie are secular sources from their own peer-reviewed journals. And yet they didn't want this movie shown.
Right. But they'll have Isaac Asimov and programs honoring him saying that we know that there is no God. You know, and that is an absolute religious philosophical statement for which he presents no scientific evidence. And yet the Privileged Planet, They are utterly intolerant. And so the Smithsonian changed their rules, and they said, we will never again allow any event that even purports to offer evidence of design.
That's right. It's a double standard.
Yeah, it sure is. And then they say, well, if you had any proof in your argument, you guys would publish in scientific journals. And they say, we won't let them publish in scientific journals.
That's why we have the Creation Research Society quarterly, because these scientists couldn't publish in secular journals because they're blacklisted.
All right. Now, the next article is a book review.
Yeah, this is a book that a friend of mine sent. In fact, you've had him on your radio show, Pete Fisk.
He sent you this book?
Yeah, he sent me this book about a year ago, and I really enjoyed it. It's called The Politically Incorrect Guide to Science. Mm. So it doesn't just deal with creation and evolution. It spends some time on that in the last couple chapters. I just think this is a great book for everybody to have, just to look at some of the politically...
Well, I see here the chapters in it, nuclear power, DDT ban, global warming. So he goes through, and he is debunking a lot of liberal... use of junk science.
That's right, and it's a very well referenced book. It's sources mostly secular scientists, mm-hmm. almost exclusively, and just lots of interesting stuff. For example, it talks about the nuclear power and how liberals hated really tried to suppress that technology and were successful for many years.
Yeah.
Yet it's the safest and cleanest of all the energy sources.
Yeah, right. It doesn't produce greenhouse gases.
At all. That's right.
Which I wouldn't care if it did, but it doesn't. Ted Kennedy.
It should make Al Gore real happy.
Al Gore should be pushing for nuclear power. Ted Kennedy produces greenhouse gases, but nuclear power plants don't. And more Americans have died in Ted Kennedy's car than at a nuclear power plant.
That's a good point.
But yet he's against nuclear power, which could help. Talk about slowing down the fantasy global warming. I mean, come on. And then, nuclear power is a great thing.
And then the thing about the DDT ban, where liberals got a hold of this and they just condemned how bad the pesticide DDT was. Well, as a result, malaria now kills more than 1 million people per year in Africa alone. And this is a direct quote from his book.
1 million people. Now,
a year.
A statistic seems often to lack... the reality behind it. But think of men, women, and children. Think of a 7-year-old boy who's dying from malaria. And it's largely because liberals who, instead of worshiping God and worshiping the Creator, they worship bugs and they worship dirt. And they brought about a ban of DDT when we were on the verge of wiping out malaria around the world.
That's right. They claimed, environmental activists claimed that DDT was cancer-causing, and of course, it hurt the wildlife.
Right.
None of this had any evidence whatsoever to show that it was true. In fact, we have plenty of evidence that it's not true at all. Mm-hmm. So this whole ban occurred because of really bad science. There was no science involved in making the claims. It's
Well, I recall they talked about the amount of DDT in fish, in lakes and rivers and ponds and all. And what they did was, and they try to scare people and say, now if you eat this fish, you're going to get DDT and get cancer and die. Well, they took the fish and they took its skin and its internal organs. Normally when you eat a fish, you wash it first. You clean it, you skin it, you gut it. They didn't do that. They took just whatever impurities were on its skin and in its organs, in its stomach, its liver, and they said, okay, here's the amount of DDT in a fish. And that probably was exaggerated like 5,000% from reality.
Yep, they misrepresented the evidence.
They misrepresented, and so that 7-year-old boy who is dying today in sub-Saharan Africa, he is dying because of the liberal obsession with dirt and rocks and bugs.
That's right.
That's why he's dying. And so multiply that child's suffering by 1 million times over every year for now, 50 years going on, or decades. When did we ban DDT? back in the 70s.
Yeah, it said here in 1972, the EPA is when the EPA banned the pesticide.
Yeah, and now it's coming back because of the desperation and because of how effective it is. But I believe it's coming back in use in Africa.
It is. Public officials are now calling for an end to its ban because, again, there's no evidence of its harmful effects. And let's say there even was a slightly harmful effect. I mean, if you're dying of malaria, what, you know?
Yeah, right. Millions. This is 40 million people dead.
And easily. Yeah.
So, obviously, that's another example of junk science. And some environmentalists will say, you know, this chemical in the environment will kill one person out of every 30 million people. And we say, well, you guys are killing a million people a year just by not letting them use DDT. So one person out of every 30 million, and they want to ban something because it'll kill one person out of every 30 million, whereas they kill a million people at a time.
Exactly.
And how about global warming? He addresses that, right?
Yeah, he does go through the global warming thing and the arguments that many of us might already be familiar with, where many scientists, even secular scientists, reject the idea that global warming is caused by human, you know, production of carbon dioxide and all those other things. It's many scientists recognize it's just a fluctuation in our environment. As Bob says, global warming is caused by the sun.
By the sun. That's right. And, in fact, it turns out just in the last couple weeks that it has been reported in science news that Mars has been getting warmer in the last few years. And Mars, I don't think it's from rush hour traffic, Fred.
Yeah, I was wondering, Bob, is that from the Mars Explorer?
Yeah, the Land Rovers they have up there.
I always thought they were battery powered, but
solar panels.
Are those Hummers they got up there? The military keeps a lot of things secret from us, so they may have a bunch of Hummers running around up there. And
yeah.
Boy, that's been horrible for Mars, and I don't know how anything could live there now, and I'm kind of getting depressed, Bob.
I don't know if I should even let the liberals listening know what kind of vehicle you drive personally. That just, it'll ruin their night. They won't be able to sleep. Okay, so this book, The Politically Incorrect Guide to Science, goes through and points out that, hey, we are being had, for example, stem cells. We only have 30 seconds left, but what's the lie about stem cells?
Oh, it's just horrible. Embryonic stem cells actually have been shown to cause cancer, and a lot of scientists are well aware of this. We've had speakers come to our local creation group, Rocky Mountain Creation Fellowship, and we've had a really prominent scientist talk about this, who works with secular scientists.
Embryonic stem cell research.
Embryonic stem cells have been proven to be real dangerous. The ones that work are adult stem cells.
Adult stem cells, there's tremendous success so far.
Tremendous success.
Embryonic stem cells tend to cause cancer.
That's right. And as we spend more money trying to look at embryonic stem cells, it's taking away from the research that's actually produced beneficial results from the adult stem cells.
Yeah, and dozens of different kinds of diseases.
And scientists know this, and the ones studying embryonic stem cells know this, but this is not being reported in the media.
It's political. So Arnold Schwarzenegger in California, the Republicans there, are spending billions of dollars of tax money on embryonic stem cell research.
That's right.
Because they like killing unborn children.
That's right. It's a culture of death.
It is. Okay, Fred Williams, thank you. We'll do this again next week.
Sounds great.
Okay, and if you would like a subscription for free to Creation Research Society Quarterly, either get our Bob and Hurt Live Science Pack or subscribe to any of our BEL materials, and we'll get you one of these for free. And Maranatha Christian Center, what a neat school in Arvada. Fred, you like it?
I love it. My kids go there.
All right. God bless you guys.